humans are many things. Often, though, we overlook the fact that humans are answering machines. We race to prescribe meaning to anything, and for every question that we are asked, we have to give an answer. A dog will uncontrollably run after a stick without stopping to think why they are chasing that stick. They'll blindly ignore the other sticks around them to chase that one. And humans can be the same for a question. Blinkers on, we will hurl ourselves into answering the question in front of us, following the thinking pathways defined for us by that question. An easy example could be, what am I grateful for versus why does my life suck? It's not about finding the right answer, it's about finding the right question first. And so, to solve many things in life, we do just need to ask better questions. That is where today's guest comes in. Topaz Azidez, whose name took me a very long time to work out how to say, even though it's spelt how it's said, well, he wrote the book called 12 Questions for Love. After having guided 1,200 couples through deep conversations over 10 years, he ended up crafting a 12-question experience that will create the most impactful and beneficial conversation that you could have in a relationship. And I will have to say straight away that when I first heard the idea pitched to me, I was so skeptical. I am very over the cheesy self-help books that sound like they'll give you an easy answer to something and is very shallow and doesn't address anything important or deep. But I did read Topaz's bio, and he had a philosophy degree from Berkeley and from Oxford. He became an Emmy award-winning director for then embarking on a crazy-sounding project where he built these five-day retreats, taking people on a journey of self-discovery that, by all accounts, were actually incredibly impactful. So I was intrigued enough to check out some of the conversations they've hosted with couples and they share on their TikTok, and 5 minutes later, I found myself crying, and I was like, you know what, I think I need to interview this guy, and I'm so glad I did. I'm truly delighted to host this conversation with Topaz on the show. He is the current founder of the Skin Deep company and a project called The And, which is about the connection between individuals and how we build a strong partnership to become us and them. We have what I found quite an enlightening debate on the art of crafting better questions and disrupting our habitual routines to create more magical moments in our relationships and just every day. We even cover how to embrace the chapters of life and what it means to be alive. So Topaz has meticulously constructed answers to improving yourself to then improve your relationships after a life of asking himself the right questions to get there. So stay tuned for the show after the break.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm going to start with, what does a growth mindset mean to you?
The line that I always tell myself is just that the path to growth is lit by your fears and your discomforts, so pursue them wherever they appear. So for me, a growth mindset is one who's aware of that and who leans into the places of discomfort or the things that scare them, because they know that on the other side of that is growth.
Okay, I think we're on the same page, because I was reading your work and thinking you lean a lot into discomfort with your types of questions, and I was like, this is perfect, so nice, I think we are aligned. So you've written the book 12 Questions, and I really like the way you architected them, and you have a lot of experience as an experienced designer. What lessons from that did you use to then create these questions?
Oh, great. So I call myself an experienced design architect, and take home value for anybody listening is, be aware of what you call yourself. Be conscientious. Just like we should be conscientious of the questions we ask ourselves, we should be conscientious of what we call ourselves, right? For a long time in my life, I was a film director. Film directors don't make card games. They don't do immersive theatrical experiences. They don't do retreats. At some point, 10 years ago, actually, I had an illumination experience. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to call myself a film director. I'm going to call myself a story breaker. Why? What's a story breaker? Well, a story breaker, we all live by stories. We have stories. This is who I am. This is what love is. This is what money is. This is what power is. And then something happens. You move country. You get divorced. You meet the love of your life. You break a leg. You get cancer. Something happens that changes your story. Breaks your old story, creates a new one. And a story breaker, in my opinion, was someone who presents new stories to people so they can grab on and explore who they are. And that gave me permission to do all these things. So you mentioned this retreat that we did. We did this retreat and I learned a lot of things about that from the retreat experience. We did three there, very intensive and beautiful. And how that relates to the book in some sense is the book stems from doing 10 years of the AND conversation where we filmed all these people together. So that's where it's really based in. But when I did the retreat, one thing I learned about the retreat was how it's important, the architecture of an experience. The architecture. What is it built on? For example, these 12 questions in the book, they're built in a certain sequence because the architecture sets you up to have a certain journey or to be able to explore certain things. And so I've learned that directly when I did these retreat experiences. The last one, which was the deepest and most profound, but also most challenging because two things. I didn't have a masculine and feminine balance leading the group. That does not lead to a very strong architecture, a very good base for the space to be held. That was a deep learning. And how it pertains to the book is just my understanding that the architecture of things is important. How the architecture creates spaces. We do things in certain spaces. You're not going to go to the bathroom in the kitchen and you're not going to cook in the bathroom. Certain spaces are more amenable or supportive of certain experiences, of certain conversations or certain actions. In pertaining to our relationships, where do we create the spaces for us to connect on a deeper level or to have a different kind of conversation than we do normally? And that's what I explore in the book.
And so before the 12 questions, you might have also questions around how and when to hold that space to be asking the questions. And then the first question is actually designed to create more space for you to understand the later questions.
Well, it's, you know, like we have these card games that we sell, right? That alone creates a space. If I just say, hey, let's play a game. If your partner comes to you, Sam, and says, Sam, why do you love me? You know, this is my go-to example, but if it's just so good. If your partner comes to you out of the blue and says, why do you love me? You're not thinking why you love your partner. You're thinking, why the hell are they asking me this question? The space hasn't been created. Is this a trap? Like, where, I'm washing the dishes or where, like, what's going on? But if you pull out a card game or you say, hey, I'd like to have a conversation with you, it's, okay, we're creating a space. Now I'm going to, in the example of the card game, why are you asking me this question? Oh, because we're playing a game and you randomly chose this question out of the card game. And the space has been created. Now the space is I can answer and you can receive. Because we're not wondering why we're in the space. We're not wondering why this question is presented. And that's something that I think that I've learned is just in order to have these moments, we need space, right? Space, like the context. It doesn't have to be heavy-handed. We're just playing a game. We're on a long drive. Let's have a conversation. Doesn't have to be heavy-handed, but you need the space so that it's understanding where the intention is coming from. And then you need well-constructed questions.
Total random thought. This just popped into my brain because I watched a hilarious Instagram video about people beginning to like meditate and they started with their affirmations of why they're like holding space and it just became a competition between them. I'm here to like practice gratitude. And that one, I'm like,
totally. I saw that one.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Do you feel like people ever try to just out-compete their partners when you're doing the videos to say better answers?
No, I don't think that. Maybe we'll get there. We've been around for 10 years, 1,200 conversations we've had, but maybe, I mean, obviously at some point it will become cliche, right? I mean, but no, we don't. I think we don't because you're creating a space and you're asking these really strong questions. And it's also one-on-one, at least when we're doing the productions, it's one-on-one. You're looking your best friend in the eye. You're looking your ex-lover in the eye. You're looking at your dad in the eye or your son. And they're asking about the time that they may have disappointed you. And that's a serious, you know, the stakes are high. And so what I've noticed is that people come in and then once they start stepping into the space, they forget about the cameras. They forget about us. And when it's finally over, they go like, wow, how long was that? You know, and then for the next few days, they usually have other thoughts come up and they really cherish the relationship because that cathartic conversation has gone to another level. And I experienced that myself. There's a video I released maybe a month or two ago called With Me and Justin, one of my good friends who I've known for 16 years. And me, who's been, you know, the founder of the Skin Deep and creator of the End and holding the space, I then stepped in We never actually had that kind of, and it was so much fun. And it was such cherishing that even me after coming, I was like, wow, the and is awesome. You know, even though I've watched so many conversations, it was like, for me, I thought I was moved. And just reminded to me that, you know, there's so much space for exploration. There's so many unexpected things that we could cherish or talk about or illuminate that we don't. And all we need is a simple space, like an intention space with well-constructed questions. It's that simple, which in essence is with podcasts. I mean, I'm on the podcast, you have, and you're asking, and now you and I are going to go to places we never expected to go.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I almost feel sad about, that I can't just interview all my friends in there. It's just a nice privacy thing. And what you're talking about, it does feel a bit like jumping into another dimension that you just didn't even notice as in the questions you're speaking about or on a podcast. And I certainly, every time I'm in an airplane, when I take off, I just sort of look at the world. I'm like, we live in like a 2D film, and like there's so much three dimensions that we just don't notice. And it's the same when you just go through your life just doing the things in front of you, and you realize, like, with a bit of autonomy, you can just ask cool questions or just sort of think like what you can do today to make it epic.
I love your term dimension. I haven't used that before, but I'm going to. That's a great, it's illuminating new dimensions. Yeah. Illuminating new dimensions that are there, but we're not illuminating them. We're not shedding the light on them. We're not paying attention to them. And when we do, there's so much energy to be harnessed from that. And I don't want to get metaphysical foo-foo, but what I'm saying is that we walk through life. We have interactions with people. They reflect us back to us, the people you engage with. Asking certain questions, there's a lot of energy that you can get that reaffirms your sense of being alive, that sense your connection to others, that we can unlock. And it's simply right there, but we don't bring conscientiousness to it. And we don't even know how. Where do you learn this? You don't learn this in school. And that's what I've been learning for the last 10 years, just by kind of stumbling into it. That's what's in the book, is the distillation of the learning. So that's the offering. But there's so much energy there.
I certainly agree that 99% of people are not boring unless you're being boring as well. And there's so much more responsibility you can take on keeping things interesting. One thing I was wondering on the questions, wondering if I should ask you more questions.
Go with it.
Okay. In terms of the questions that you've asked and refined over 1,200 conversations, did you have very similar versions of the questions that you use that you've slightly changed for some small nuance? And what was the difference that the effect had?
For sure. So one thing we learned was, for instance, when you create the space, people have a conversation and you ask a question, what is our biggest challenge? That's giving you almost the arbiter of truth. You're now, to answer that question, you're going to say, this is our biggest challenge. And by that question is already framing as though you're going to decide what is the biggest truth, what is the biggest challenge. But if you tweak it to what do you feel is the biggest challenge, all of a sudden there's more space because this is your feeling. You can name anything you want, and there's not really something for us to have a confrontation around or conflict, because that's your feeling, that's your experience, or even what do you think. So when we speak to each other, just even creating this space for it being an opinion instead of the ultimate truth, and we ask each other questions about the truth all the time. If you think about the questions you ask your partners, people in your life, are you asking them a question, or are you being asked a question as though that puts you in a position where your statement is the truth, the absolute truth, versus asking, what do you think, what do you feel, what in your opinion? Just adding those words, do you think, do you feel, in your opinion, either any of them, creates a space like, hey, you are now free to say anything you want. And actually, I can't really argue with you because that's your opinion, that's your feeling.
And it doesn't come across as arguing if you think something different to me, or like, if I'm saying my feelings, like my feelings are probably more likely to be influenced by if you have some other information. Whereas if I say this is my fact and you have some other information, I now have to like defend my fact.
That's a very small one. Another one is sometimes we make grammatical mistakes in the writing of it. And so I was like, well, this is not grammatically correct. I'm like, well, listen, if we're going to write formal, grammatically perfect questions, we're going to get grammatically formal answers. The question primes the answer. So if I make a slight grammatically mistake in the question, that error gives the person who's responding also permission to make an error. And they'll go that much further because it's not perfect. And so you're saying in the virtue of the question, that doesn't have to be perfect. I want real.
Yeah. Seems like the definition of like bug is actually a feature.
Yeah. I think, for example, when we fail, we never say action. We are not asking people to turn on. Okay, this is a moment and now we're rolling. Now action, now be someone else. No, it is what it is. So on the end and everything we do and what we're offering other people is create spaces for us to be human with each other. We're not perfect. It's about the imperfections. One of my favorite questions, what's your favorite imperfection of mine? It's been a beautiful lesson of sitting back, watching all these intimate conversations. And I think audiences, when they watch it online as well, get the same, which is you can't stop seeing yourself through the conversation of others. You're watching them have this conversation and you're wondering not only how they're experiencing it, but you're wondering, oh, how would I respond in that situation? Or do I speak to my partner in the same way? Or do I listen to my partner in the same way as that person is doing? In what way does this reflect who I am in the relationships of my life? And so you can't help but think about the connections you have with others when you watch these other intimate conversations. And that, I think, is a really, at least for my life, in terms of the relationship with my people in my life that I am in touch with, this work has really helped because it's been a constant reflection.
I've certainly found for me with the podcasters and my concept of growth mindset has changed a lot over the 7 years and definitely become a lot better at growth, even though I thought I knew what I was doing at the start. Sure, I'm not perfect. And do you feel like you were thinking about how you might use this for yourself as you were writing the questions?
Totally. I mean, that's how I write the questions, is I just think, what would I want to be asked, or what would I really want to ask someone else? And then you also make different versions of the question and adjustments and trying to connect oftentimes, for instance, two things that are not normally connected. How much does earning money cost you? How does conflict make us better? Asking things that we don't often connect, but asking them because then your brain is there to serve and wants to answer it. And so it will go searching for the answers. And that effort is always an interesting exploration. Anytime shit happens to you, excuse my French, but things happen, what's the question you ask about it? Are you asking, why did this happen to me? What if you change it? What's the lesson in this? Or how is this going to be the fertilizer for who I'm going to become? So every time we are always answering questions, we're not aware that we're always answering a question. We're spending a lot of time on the answer instead of paying attention to the question. If we change the focus to the question, we will get more empowering answers.
I had a really good analogy of the concept of like humans are just like answering machines, which I think you'd actually said yourself, but it's a bit like throwing sticks for a dog, as in like they just got to run and get the stick. They don't really think about why it's being thrown. And like with a question, we just sort of bulldoze straight into it without really thinking about what's a better question and how to actually shape what the experience will be or what we're going to find out from it.
We can be the creators of our experience if we're conscientious about it. And oftentimes the question itself, the framing, is what sets up the experience. If you're in a breakup or your business partner screws you over and you're wondering, why the hell did that happen? You just change the question to, what's the lesson in this? What's my responsibility? What will I take away from this that will make me that much better? Reframing the question is a way of us being creators of our experience. It's a simple tool to help with that.
Yeah, I like the reframing of the question, why is this happening to me, to what is happening for me, or why is this happening for me? One that's like empowering version of the same thing.
That pivot is a growth mindset. It's, this is happening, then okay, I'm going to accept that, or I'm going to look at this with a growth mindset. And therefore, the questions I ask will be those coming that are more empowering for my own growth.
We're about to find out some of Topaz's favorite questions for life outside of relationships in just a minute. But firstly, one of my favorite questions is, how do I sustainably maintain focus and energy using the latest science in a single, easy-to-take formula without sacrificing an entire kitchen cupboard that ends up looking fit for a drug lord because it's stuffed full of 16 bags of the highest quality ingredients known to man for your brain health? Yes, that is a question I ask myself. I do have ADHD. Anyway, the answer is Magic Mind. It's just a single daily shot that has all of the best ingredients, which saves you time and money. And I really do hope you try it because it will improve your life. And I also hope they continue sponsoring me because I really, really like it. So how do you buy it? Well, head to magicmind.com/growthms and use the code for my listeners, growthms20 at checkout, which will give you 56% off even if you are already a customer. They have a money-back guarantee, so nothing to lose. magicmind.com/growthms. And at the checkout, use growthms20. Details are in the description. Do you have a lot of other questions that have nothing to do with relationships that you've been like pondering that are just super deep?
Recently that I play with is, you know, if you had a crystal ball that told you the complete truth, what would you never ask it?
I feel like sometimes we have secrets that we don't even realize we have. As in, you have the obvious things that you're hiding, but there's lots of stuff that sort of is just snuck away. It just isn't even there. But maybe that's something I should be asking my crystal ball.
I think that's exactly true. I think it's called, I call it the blind spot. It's our blind spot. There are things that we don't see of each other. And that's why I guarantee your partner sees things in you that you know are there, but you don't want to see, or that you forgot that are there. Yeah, and I'm not just talking about negative things. I'm talking about positive things. What's one thing you want me to know? This is a question we ask or similar. And the partner usually says that how great you are. You don't see it yourself. We are reflections for each other. That's what's beautiful about this human experience, is that you're in a relationship with other people who can see you, who can reflect you back to you. But how do we engage with that? How do we open the door to have that experience? How do we play that instrument of connection? Space and well-constructed questions. And the questions that we often ask each other are quite banal and simple in societal programming. How's your day? What's the weather like? Even the questions that people buy are not acknowledging the connection. Our questions are quite strong because they acknowledge the connection. We don't have a question, for instance, that says, what are you scared of, Sam? If I ask you that, and your partner asks you that, and your mom asks you that, you're going to answer the same thing. I'm scared of death. I'm scared of snakes. But that doesn't acknowledge our connection. Reshape the question to acknowledge the connection. What do you think we're both scared of? What do you think you're scared of that I'm not? That question, both of those examples, acknowledge our connection. You will answer that question differently than if I ask it, than if your partner asks it, and if your mom asks it. So by really shaping the question that acknowledges your connection gives you an opportunity to explore your connection. And there's so much energy and nutrients in that, so much in the reflection. But you just said, like, there's questions I don't even know about myself or things I don't know. And then what if you learn them? You could spend time on, wow, I didn't realize that. There's energy that makes you feel more active, right? It makes you feel more embodied. Maybe I'm saying things that are not quite as rooted in the earth as you would like, but I think I get energy from that.
No, definitely. I have two points to go into here. Firstly, I wanted to say that because you were talking about the issues of saying generic things. And when you first said a lot of partners would tell their partner that they're so great and they wish they could see that. And I was like, oh, that's so generic. And I was like, I would literally say that to my partner. Like, oh, damn it. Internally, because of like, yeah, I wish you could see that better. And I'm like, oh, yeah, totally is the right answer for me. And then I was thinking about the concept of just being eloquent, because I've been really trying to work on this myself, because we just use standard answers for things of like, how was your day? Fine. How are you feeling? Great. Whatever. And it can be really different when you just try and not use your stock phrases for things. So my partner was reading a book on the balcony and having like a nice Sunday. And instead of just saying, that's nice, I was like, oh, sounds like you've really created a recipe for a lovely day, or something that was just like, I just put a bit of effort into like empathizing with the actual work he'd done to have a nice day. And we can just do the work ourselves just by asking ourselves the question of how can I actually use words that aren't the words I always use. But I think by having really good questions that you're asking, you kind of make the person more eloquent by making them think about what it is they're actually feeling to explain those things in more depth.
But that's beautiful. What comes up for me is that we all forget that every moment is once in a lifetime. But we forget that because in order to survive and make things efficient so that we're not overloaded, we compartmentalize things and say, oh, this is that, this is that, this is the same, this is the same. And then we use similar language to say, oh, that's fine, this is great, okay, ask the same questions. We're not acknowledging that every moment is once in a lifetime. And we think that if we put a little more effort, which is a little more energy, we don't realize that the payoff is that much more.
It's like, oh, so much as in when you just put like a little bit more effort into cooking your food and it gets like 10 times better.
I mean, frankly, I'm not a very good chef, but when I make my own food, it tastes great. To me, it tastes amazing because I spent the time making it, right? So are we bringing that to our relationships? Are we bringing that to our conversations? And this doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be that much effort. It's similar to when I see couples, and we've all seen this, at the restaurant. It's dinner time. They're both on the phone. And I've been wondering, what is that about? And my analysis would be, well, they're both getting these quick endorphin hits. They're sliding through Instagram or their notes for new pieces of information from email, DMs, or whatever it is. And they're getting hits of endorphins, right? Because every little piece of information. Instead of putting it aside, looking at each other, and getting a much bigger hit of endorphin because they discover a new piece of information, but they just have to dig a little bit deeper. They just have to ask a different question. And you can relate to this as a surfer. You're waiting for that set. The set comes in. You're waiting for which wave on the set. And when you finally catch that wave, you might be waiting a while. It's that much more rewarding. Are we applying that to our relationships? Are we investing that much more? And all we have to do is ask a well-constructed question. bring a little more presence to the question you ask.
One thing we haven't mentioned that this has just reminded me of was you do speak a lot about listening with your whole body and paying full attention. And one, I totally agree that Instagram and just the general attention demands from everything, that it's just splitting our ability to just sit still and listen to things is a total nightmare. And life is just so much nicer when you actually just don't do a million things, which links back to actually the question around what does making money cost you. And I found that I have ADHD and trying to run three different businesses at once was really stupid, and that actually it's quite nice just running a podcast and having quite a lot of time to do things like go surfing and do stuff for my partner if he needs help on things. And it's really, really quite chill, and I don't need to be crazy rich, because if I can do basically all I would do once I was rich, which has been super nice, and my mental health has been 10 times better, and I'm like, cool, I can just work on getting really good at being a podcaster for like another 7 years and actually be really good at this by the end of it.
What comes up for me there when you say that, because I think that's really important, is to ask you the question why. But let me give a tool for the listeners, is question loops. So there's a question loop of why, and then you just ask why. You answer it, and then you ask why again, and you ask why again. You just ask it six times through to find something deeper. But there's other question loops. Like you say, I want this. And so the first question is why, and you answer it. And then you answer, then you ask the next question, what if it's already so? And then you say why. Then they answer that, and they say, well, what if that's already so? And you just do this question loop of asking the same two questions. And you go through that cycle of why, answer it, what if it's already so? Answer it, why, answer it, what if it's already so? And that takes you to interesting places. And constructing these question loops is a great way to really dig deeper to finding the reason behind why you're doing what you're doing. Because oftentimes we are in societal programming. Oh, I want a big million-dollar house on Malibu, or I want this or that. Why? You know, I want to be wealthy and rich because I can have free time. Well, you could be unemployed and have free time. Really questioning what it is that you want. But we need the tools to do that. So having these question loops is really helpful. One is like, why? What if it's already so? Why? What if it's already so? Right?
Yeah, it definitely helps create more independent thinking for yourself, as opposed to relying on the answers given to us from society.
Society or our parents, or right, is really finding out what it is that, because by asking a different question, different opportunities arise. Different opportunities might give you a different sense of what it means to be alive.
What have you found? Does it mean to be alive exactly?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a father of a 4-year-old son and a 1-year-old daughter. My 1-year-old daughter literally just took her first steps alone about an hour ago, which I got on camera. I was so excited. Well, I got the second round on camera. The first one, I was in shock. And then say, so one thing that has come for me now that at this point, because there's one thing I've learned, I'm 47 now. I'm a father of 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. And I've had, like you, when I read your bio, I was like, well, this sounds interesting. You know, I've traveled around the world, companies, and died 3 or 4 times. And I haven't done the ultra marathon stuff, but not gone on the same beaten path and find your own tread, is that there are many chapters to life. I remember being 30 and wanting to be a filmmaker and talking to my friend, and she's like, but you're so young. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm 30. Like, it has to happen now. And now I'm 47, 17 years later. And I realize, no, Topaz, there's chapters to life. This is the chapter I'm in now. Enjoy it. And it sounds like a cliche, but what I mean by that is that you could be different characters in each chapter. This could be the podcast chapter. The next one could be the kite surfing chapter. The next one could be the father chapter. There are different chapters. We're not the same throughout our whole life. It's not forever. It's for only now. And that's really a beautiful lesson. And the other lesson I learned by having children is that they are a great reflection for the stuff I still need to work on. I look at my son. He's a born direct film. He wants you to do it his way, exactly his way. And I look at him. And if you don't do it, he'll walk you back to play it over again. And I realize I'm looking at him and I say, the only difference between me and him is that I'm an adult who can cover that sentiment and that desire and that feeling and that anxiety when people don't do what I want with some cultural so it looks fine. But deep down, that's how I feel. So how can I help heal this kid when I haven't healed myself? I still get anxiety if people don't do it exactly like I want them to do it. And I get angry and anxious. And yet he's not covering it up. He's just being how he's feeling. He's not covering up with some cultural facades. But I am, because I've been trained to do that. I've learned how to do that, but I still have the feeling. So Topaz, how can I teach my son better? I have to fix myself. And so that's been a beautiful learning.
Probably lots of questions to ask yourself there. Yeah, it's really interesting. It does make me wonder, because of before we started the interview, you were asking me a lot of questions and stuff, which was really nice that you've shown the attention to actually see what's going to happen. But do you think some of that's come from like your control of like how you want the video to be once it comes out and everything?
No, it comes from my desire to like serve. I ask you, who's listened to your podcast and what do they get from it? And how can we serve them? And I ask that for everyone because ultimately they're giving us their time to listen to us now. We have to give back. Like, we can't just make it about ourselves. How are we giving them take-home values to support them in their own life journey? So that's why I want to know who's listening and how can we meet their needs or support them in whatever the audience needs is. Another flip side is, sure, I want to control it.
You should have left it there. I can say that this is an epic lesson for most creators because so many people start a podcast of like just wanting everyone to listen to them or a YouTube or whatever. And you're like, this is why so many of them are awful, because people just haven't actually worked out what people need to listen to, and they just want people to listen to whatever they have feel like saying, which is super frustrating when you're trying to teach people how to make a good podcast, that is.
But that leads to a question like, who am I serving in everything? My work, in my family, in the current conversation, who am I serving? Am I serving my own ego, myself? Is it about me? Is it about them? Am I really serving them or am I serving myself? I think that's a good question.
So sort of go back to what you're also saying around like the concept that you have periods in your life of what you most need, because I think one of the problems, partly with, as we were saying, like your phone just trying to like attention hijack you, is also we kind of want to do everything all at once, and we seem to be in a massive rush because of dopamine and everything we see everywhere. But you just don't realize how much richer it is to experience something in more depth by like doing it for 7 years with focus and having the time and rest in between the days when you're working to actually enjoy your life, as opposed to feeling in a rush and you're not even serving yourself, let alone anyone else that you're hypothetically serving with the thing you're trying to create but failing at, which is ironic. On a hard topic change, something that I said I would try and talk to you about but I hadn't got around to yet was the concept of, do you know the 36 questions to fall in love to? I felt like that does have some similar architecture of like the way it starts and then leads you into the thing, but it's very much a way to fall in love and like make you feel close to someone that you don't know, whereas your book is much more about like when you do have a relationship, how to keep it rich and notice the things that you maybe haven't spent time noticing, which I really like. But in both sort of regards, I would say they can be almost too experientially rich and amazing. It can make you kind of think that everything is brilliant when perhaps it isn't. Because I was thinking I might ask you a question of like, is there, which question was the most well likely to make or break a couple? And like, did you have a question that resulted in everyone breaking up? But I felt like they probably isn't going to happen and that like everyone just feels better after asking these questions. But surely some people of the 1,200 people you've interviewed actually should have broken up, because they can't all be like perfectly fixed now that they've had these conversations, but maybe they had a nice experience during it.
People play and they want to break up from it, right? Sometimes that happens. But why is that happening? Because sometimes one partner wants to play and have a deeper conversation with their partner and the partner doesn't want to play. What does that say about the relationship? Is that the only thing that one partner wants to participate with the other but is getting rejected or is not participating with, they're not doing together? One thing I find is that sometimes we'll get a comment, oh, these questions are going to lead to a breakup. These are creating conflict. It's like, well, conflict is not necessarily bad. The question is how we harness conflict. You can utilize constructive conflict. How many times do you have a fight with your partner that when you make up afterwards, you feel that much stronger? You feel the relationship is that much more resilient. Your love for this person is that much deeper because they're there with you. They face the challenge together. And oftentimes we're trying to avoid the discomfort. You don't want to have this conversation because it's uncomfortable. But on the flip side of this discomfort is growth. Our relationship would be that much stronger. That's much more fulfilling. I can look you in the eye and know that you've been there with me. You haven't left. And you're standing here with me and we're facing it together and we're going to grow and achieve and grow together with it. And so for those who, I know there's a lot of relationships, people who don't want to have the conversation, that's fine. But what else in your relationship is also vacant? Where your partner's not dancing with you or you're not dancing with them. And is that the relationship you want to have? Maybe. But for those who want more and the people listening to your podcast, growth mindset, that means they want more. And the question is, how do you do that? For me, even just asking the question, because look, in the game, what we offer it, you don't have to answer anything you don't want. You have the right to take a pause, to take a pass. You don't need to answer anything you don't want. But we're not putting people in the corner. That's not good either. But just asking the question and saying, okay, let's talk about that later. Or I don't want to talk about it now. A question's been asked. You're both thinking about it. It has been unlocked. the seed has been laid and it will come up. And maybe there's parts of your relationship that you do hide intentionally. That's only going to grow the cancer, and ultimately it's going to take over the relationship and kill it. So isn't it better to face that now and face it and either heal it or just separate? I think oftentimes we're avoiding uncomfort. And I don't even want to make it feel like this whole book is heavy. It's not heavy. It's also can be fun and light. And oh my God, we have so much fun together. I didn't even realize that that's part of our relationship. And now we articulate it, it feels that much better, that much more alive. Wonderful. It doesn't have to be all heavy either.
I do agree that I'm much more into the open vulnerability to just see what's going to be wrong and just like get to it quickly. And I think Alain de Botton has a nice quote that like slightly wrong can end up being indistinguishable from entirely horrific. And like, that's just nice. Because, yeah, sure, things don't need to be perfect also, but there is some stuff that just isn't right for us. And it's better to just be upfront with that, really.
But also, if we can nip it in the bud, we can face it now so it doesn't grow into something bigger. So my questions 4, 5, 6, which is about conflict. The first three are about the past and about your trust and your love and the synergy of your connection. The second three are about how we deal with conflict. The first one of that threesome is, what are you hesitant to tell me and why? What are we hesitant to share? These are small things that are kind of there, the small seeds, which then can turn into the fifth question, which is, what's the biggest challenge in our relationship right now? And what is it teaching us? Right now, this probably become a challenge, and it's offered as a challenge. Like, what is it teaching us? And then the sixth one becomes, well, what? Maybe there's a challenge that we didn't really deal with, but I found a way to fix it. And so the sixth one addresses that by saying, you know, what's one sacrifice I've made that you haven't felt is acknowledged? Or what's one sacrifice you've made that you feel I haven't acknowledged? So then we're talking about something that, which if sometimes people make sacrifices in a relationship, and if it's not acknowledged, it can turn into resentment. And that's also this lingering cancer or tumor that's sitting there that could be, or a bug in the system that could really take it down. So just bringing it up creates a space for a conversation around it. And we need a guide for it. We need like a toolkit. We need the blueprints for how it works. And this is the offering.
It's definitely, I feel like some people are just brought up. I don't know how to speak English. Either way, they grow up being taught how to deal with these things better than other people. But I also was wondering if you've noticed, because you've done so many interviews with different people, if there's been much cultural or regional variations in like how people respond to the 12 questions, because we all heard about like attachment styles or like trauma and things, but is there just differences in just general cultures that you notice of how they can respond to the questions?
There's differences in culture. One that I've noticed is, you know, we had a production in Montreal, French-speaking Canada, Quebec, yeah? And they were much more comfortable talking about sex than the American audience, for instance. Another one I notice is generational gaps. When there's different generations have different ways of, there's certain things that we don't talk about in public. And younger generations are totally open about talking in public. I've witnessed some conversations between young millennials at breakup conversation on the end where I am in awe of their ability to have a conversation. Their ability to sit with their emotions, to articulate it, to share, to explore the relationship, and also in front of the cameras and being open about it, just to me, it was remarkable. So I do see there's also generational gaps. I do see there's also cultural things where we did a production in Paris, for instance, where they were quite reserved. They're quite reserved and did not want to talk about things on camera at all. So it's just different cultures have somewhat different societal programming or different boundaries for what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. But you always find differences, you know, individuals that are anomalies or differences. And it's really hard to say this is how it is for everyone, but there are some trends. What I have noticed just is that a lot of us converse in societal programming or cultural mantras. If we deep listen, like you were saying, listen to the body and speak from there, we'll say what's unique to the relationship. And so that's going back to when you're in conversation, instead of speaking from the head that's responding, that's defending, that's trying to win the argument, listening to the body, being present to where you're at, listening through the body can bring you to a more present, conscientious response to what's true for whatever is now. The brain is built to protect you and the heart's built to connect you. So what are you listening to? What's serving what? The brain should serve the heart because the heart's there to connect. And a lot of us is operating from the head, which is fine, but that's just built to protect us. So we'll ask the simple questions. We'll give the simple responses. We'll give the efficient thing just because we're built to protect us. But that's not necessarily what's going to connect you. What's going to connect you is listening to the body, dropping in and being present to the moment, giving a little more effort to ask a nicer question of, wow, you've really built the recipe for a beautiful day. to your partner. And I guarantee you, I'm sure she looked at you for a moment and she gave you a slightly different look than you were expecting or that you normally get because you made that slightly different effort.
I was like, yes. I pointed something out here. I was like, literally, level up, Sam. You've done something.
Well, when are you going to play the 12 questions with your partner? Or have you already?
Yeah, I have spoken about when we're going to sort that out. So she's currently in Portugal and I'm in Amsterdam, but we're going to be in the Netherlands next week. So I think it's going to happen because I really liked it as a general framework. Something I guess worth asking you was, because you've seen so many people and you seem to have a relationship going on, besides the 12 questions, what would you say seem to be the daily practices or habits that you think are just most beneficial for nurturing and sustaining a deep, meaningful relationship?
All right. Headline is like respect the date night. Respect the date night. This is my wife and I, which means don't plan something else out. Respect the date night means we have to do it. And then when you do, and I know since maybe it's so American, it's so cliche, but it's just a funny top line. But what it is make time for each other and don't utilize that time to do something regular. Go out to dinner and do what you do every time. Ask a different question. Go for a different hike. Do a different project. Do something different that reminds you of how unique the moment is. If we go to the same restaurant every night of the week, to the same spot and doing the same thing, it's nice in terms of tradition and gives you a thread through time of the same spot, but bring more consciousness to the uniqueness of that evening. That's why the card games work with the different questions. We have pairs that write us. They do their Sunday check-in. They'll ask three questions on Sunday or every night before they go to bed or in the morning when they have coffee together, they'll pull out one question from the card deck. How do you create different moments that are unique that remind you that every moment is once in a lifetime?
I was kind of just writing something similar for an episode that I was releasing today on part of the just doing something different with someone is like helps you to discover new parts of yourself, which is kind of one of the reasons why people like cheat or do other things is like you sort of forget the other parts of you that exist. Whereas if you can do a completely new hobby or something together, it does feel like more self-exploration, which kind of just keeps that interest going. And yeah, I love the way you sort of framed that as like basically the perfect recipe of just how to keep a relationship vibrant and more colorful.
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned how you have to exercise every day. I've heard that on one of your other podcasts. You're talking to some ultra marathoner. You're saying that you can't not exercise every day. That keeps you flexible and in good shape because you're practicing every day. If you didn't run for a week, the first time you go running, you'd feel that you're a bit stiff. If you didn't run for a month, you go for a run, you might pull a hamstring because it's been that stiff. The same thing happens in our relationships. If we're not stretching them out, we like, oh, everything's fine. We're everything comfortable. We're not actually doing anything different. Everything is great. But underneath the surface, it's getting stiff. And then one slight action can tear the hamstring or something can happen where you feel uncomfortable. So how do we keep our relationships fresh? And the same way that we exercise, how do we exercise our relationship? Just creating moments of connection. It could be a conversation. It could be going for a hike. That's what I try to do and fail at with a father. You know, all our energy right now is going to our two kids, my wife and I. But it's a chapter.
I have a few friends with kids that age. And it's definitely a chapter where I don't know how people get anything done. It's just spending like a few hours with my friends with kids that age and I'm like already ready for bed. I'm like, what? You have this every day? What? Does one of you need to go on holiday for like a few days and I could stay here with this? I have no idea. So good for you. That's definitely a thing. Yeah, I don't know how are you keeping positive when Adelaide is in the kids just ill for a few days and decides to be annoying even though they're actually a really nice child and throws things at you or something? Cause food time is like, what's going on? Why don't you just eat? Stop throwing it at me, kind of thing.
You want to know how I stay positive? Sometimes I don't perform as great as I would like to be as a father. I talk about it with my wife and I apologize to my son or my daughter, but I'm human. And there's chapters. And I think what's important to me is that my children know the full range of emotion. So if my wife and I have a contentious conversation in front of them, we don't want to get out of hand, but it's okay for them to see that as long as they also see the makeup and they see that we take responsibility for our actions. I don't want my kids to be scared of conflict, right? I don't want them to be scared of conflict. I don't want them to be scared of emotion or passion. but I just want them to know that we have to be responsible for our actions and we have to communicate. That's what's important to me with my kids, in front of my kids, in terms of my relationship with my wife.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I think being able to get them better at labeling what their emotions are rather than just being angry or something, it's really nice to see parents that have done that. And you're like, wow, I don't think I could even do that. And your kids just sort of explain why they've just been embarrassed because they're annoyed about something. Like, what's going on? It's cool.
But, you know, also the question of, you know, how do you stay positive in light of everything you see on the news and you see where the world is at, right? And for me, because that question comes up quite a bit for me, and I hear people asking and such, and for me is, let's improve that question. Because that question, how do you stay positive? Okay, we can get a list of but that's an uphill battle. We could also change that question as, what can I do today, or what can I do this month in light of what's happening to make the world that much better, right? Like, how do we ask a question that can give us a little bit more agency and empowerment? By me saying, how do I stay positive? Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that. Because there's always something you can do to make your day better, regardless of whatever the situation is, even if it's terrible. Yes, there's lots of stuff going on that's bad in the world, but most places, even when I've been to places that are bad, they usually aren't as bad as people say. Obviously, stuff like Gaza and things is literally terrible right now. But like, I remember I went to Mexico like 7 years ago. It was like a year or so after there'd been the riots in London. And I got to Mexico City, which is meant to be one of the most dangerous cities in the world. And everyone was like, oh my God, you're from London? It's crazy there. I'm like, I'm in Mexico City? And you guys, what's going on? And everything was completely fine. I was super safe. It was lovely. And it's just their idea from the news was that like London was still like a raging pit fire. And the concept in the west of Mexico City was that it's also terrible and you don't really get the most accurate idea, because I've done so much traveling, I just don't take most of what's said at surface level if everything is terrible. And yeah, I feel like most people are actually quite nice. Even when you have a conversation with someone or someone's like being abusive, it's not because of they're like an evil person, they're just a bit inept or stupid. And when you take out the evil intent of most people, you realize that like most of the world is fine. They're just sort of stuck in the same situation and behaving how you would behave in that situation. And it's more, okay, how can we just create communication and help people understand each other, which probably involves watching less of the news and stuff that divides them, as opposed to taking it so seriously.
And asking better questions.
Exactly, 100%.
You know, like what you're saying, that happens in terms of traveling, and it happened in my life a lot. But also, and you alluded to the, in the end of what you were saying now, is just it also pertains to how we relate to other people. How could this person do that? What's that about? And, okay, stop. Let's have a conversation. Maybe they defined something differently than you did. Maybe they saw something that you didn't see. Maybe they misunderstood something, right? Just by having the conversation clears up the space. To me, war is just a very extreme version of miscommunication. And what can I do in the scope of the world, the war that's happening now and everything, and it's really tragic and sad, is I can just improve the relationship with the people in my life. You know, I can face the conflict that comes up and fix them. You know, you can disarm the conflict by having a quality conversation, by creating the space and asking well constructive questions.
Yeah, I guess the questions are kind of disarming conflict in relationships anyway. Which does transition nicely into possibly my last question of, in terms of future projects, are there any aspects of like human relationships or questions in general that you want to explore in things that you do in the future?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm really interested to see how we can apply this beautiful format of the AND to conflict. So 12 questions for peace. But that would be a few year long project, and I need the right partners for that, because I'm not fully equipped to take that on. Our team is not fully equipped to take that on our own. So that's one point that I'm really interested in. The other point that I'm interested in is kind of doing some neuroscience research on what happens in the body and the brain when you have these types of conversations. I feel like so much of today's world is the language is science, and you have all these like body hackers, and everything is communicated through science. And so I think doing some research on what happens to the body, what happens to the brain when you have these deeper conversations that illuminate or give you a greater sense of what it means to be human, illuminates humanity. I would really like to do that too.
Yeah. I'd be interested to hear about that. So I started the season on relationships, basically just doing like the biology of love and like hormones and things. Because if you think about humans, we think that we are like rational, conscious beings. And yet our emotions are clearly very much driven by like biology. And if you have a bad night's sleep, I know I'm irritable. So clearly I'm not in control of my irritation levels. And just like basic stuff like that. Obviously, if you take drugs and you can be euphoric and like want to love and hug everyone, like that's clearly like your emotions get changed by chemicals in your body, and just basically breaking down the main chemicals that happen with love. And it was really interesting. I was like, why is this not in more love relationship books? Not to complain about your book at all. But yeah, so it's really fascinating, like the chemicals that are going on that are driving your emotions and feelings and decisions. Because yeah, when we embark in love, we kind of get a little bit like blindsided by lots of rationality, and it's just evolution doing its thing and putting hormones to make you think these things. So yeah, we're really interested to see what happens during like conflict resolution and these sorts of questions that you have. Because yeah, I don't think it's as well studied. So looking forward to that. If you have anything, let me know.
Will do.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for creating the space, Sam. It's been a pleasure, man.
That's really nice to talk to you, and absolute pleasure to dig into more questions from what I had from the initial stuff that you'd been doing.
Do me a favor. Ask the 12 questions with your partner and let me know how the conversation goes. That's all.
I will. That's fine.
And if it doesn't work, let me know it doesn't work. And if it does work, let me know it works.
Yeah, really looking forward to doing that. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day and good time moving to Uruguay.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
Right. Now, checking in 2 weeks later as we release this episode, I can confirm that I did go through the 12 questions with my partner, and it was a refreshing, deepening, and enlightening thing to go through. It's certainly impacted beyond just the conversation and with the way that we notice things, and I feel more in touch with the special moments that we have every day that have the potential to become the memories that we cherish in the future. So it was a really special process, and thanks Topaz for writing the book and also talking to me. I would totally recommend that you do read the book on the 12 questions for love to get the most out of it. Besides the carefully crafted questions, he offers a lot of insight into how to build space and how to build better questions in general, whilst also expanding on what the specific questions in the book will mean to your relationship and how you can proactively improve the area that they relate to. If you can't afford a book for whatever reason, you can watch his project The And on TikTok and YouTube, and you might be able to work out the questions for yourself. But I would remind you that if you ask them in the wrong order, it could become messy and not work so well, and that the book is just a lot more advice on the whole thing and is really good. And then, yes, the actual episode was a great set of lessons from a renowned philosopher and experienced architect, which I hope really helped you. It was certainly a great way for me to launch back into having interviews again on the show, as it has been a while, as I was in Nepal for the final 3 months of last year and have only just started doing these again. We shall definitely be having more experts in science and philosophy or specific aspects of human behavior and performance on the show going forwards. So any questions or suggestions for guests that you want me to have on the show, please do let me know. If you learned anything, do share the episode with a friend, as that is how we grow. And then, of course, if you can, please leave a good rating. It is the number one thing to make me feel good at night, and it's also the best thing for me to show off to my podcaster friends with during the day. So you're really making a difference there when you do leave me a good rating. Thanks in advance. And back to a serious note, any questions that you want answered on the show or feedback you have for me, stick them in a comment or reach out to me at growthmindsetpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for everybody who has been doing that. And now, finally, remember that life is really short. It is too short for bad conversation and shallow connections, so level up your questions, and also don't put off your dreams, goals, or feeling of being content until you hit some target or other. You need to get comfortable living life here today, because that is where life is lived. So be kind to yourself, and whilst you're at it, be kind to someone else too.